teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. And for those of you who are new, welcome as well. Today, we have another esteemed guest. Her name is Dr. Mercedes.
And almost.
Almost close. She'll correct me. Snyder is a Louisiana public school teacher and education activist who holds a Ph.D. in applied statistics and research method. She blogs regularly on both local and national educational issues on her own education blog, dutch29.wordpress.com, and can be reached via her email, dutch22@aol.com. Her new book, The Chronicles of Echoes, Who's Who and the Implosion of American Public Education, is now available on Amazon.com. And let me give you a brief description of her book. Corporate reform is not a reform at all. Instead, it is a systematic destruction of the foundational American institution of public education. The primary motivation behind this destruction is greed. Publication in America is worth almost $1 trillion a year, whereas American public education is a democratic institution. Its destruction is being choreographed by a few wealthy, well-positioned individuals and organizations. This book investigates and exposes the handful of people and institutions that are often working together to become the driving force behind destroying community public education. That is quite a statement. And Dr. Snyder, welcome
hey.
To the show.
Hey, I have to put out a correction. Even more than my name, my email is deutsch29@aol.com. I don't know who they're going to get if they email deutsch22.
Did I say 22?
If that one exists. No, I'm not at 22. I'm deutsch29. That's
no.
How I named the blog, was deutsch29 after my email. So.
Well, did I say 22 or 29?
You did. You said 22, and I thought, well, I wonder who that is. Yes, it's 29.
I made a mistake, people. Let me tell you something. I was forewarned, but a couple of days ago, that if I screwed up her name, I would be in big trouble.
That's right. I'm going to come right to California and set you straight. That's okay. Hey,
no,
I was set up with this name.
Tell them what you said. Tell them what you're going to do. The slap
I don't
on
know.
The
what did
back.
I say?
Slap on the back every time I messed it up?
No. I said that's a way to remember to pronounce it. You see, people
okay.
want to say Mercedes. They see it written down, and they want to say Mercedes, and they ask me for help on how to remember not to say Mercedes. And one of the helps that I give is imagine as you're beginning to say my name that someone hits you on the back, and so it comes out, Mercedes, that accent on the first syllable. Not that I was going to come and smack you. No, of course not. But to the help with saying the name, I just wanted to offer that help. It was a setup, folks. I had to do something great with my life with a name like that, to live up to that name and to manage to grow into it. That was my father's idea, by the way, the name Mercedes.
Well, I can relax then, because I had two sleepless nights.
Oh, that's
trying
a shame.
To make sure that I would not do this. But anyway.
Well, don't go to sleep now.
I promise. I want to start with asking you about the title of your book. Explain it for us. What does it mean to you, The Chronicle of Echoes?
Well, in the book, I explain two metaphors, really, that came together in the titling of the book. The echoes, we're being told in public education that we are failing, and that statement is being echoed. It's being repeated. It's an endless statement now. American public education is failing. We've got failing schools. We've got failing teachers. They're failing the kids. You know, we're going to be a failure as a country. And so what I did in this book is I created a chronicle. It's an investigation, a listing of the stories of those who are echoing the fact that I and other public school teachers are failing America. And it's an erroneous, deceptive, and dangerous message. The other metaphor in the title is that this echo is going to create an implosion. These people, the corporate reformers, are getting inside and have gotten inside of American public education, and they're setting up to implode us, to break us from the inside. They're inside spreading this message of failure and this supposed corporate fix, which is nothing more than chasing profits. That's what it is in the end. I'd like to think it was nobler, but it isn't. In the end, it all comes down to money. And so they're inside the institution of public education, and they are setting us up to break us from the inside. And so that's the image that I had of an imploding building. And implosions happen when the dynamite is set up on the inside, and those who would perform the destruction are safely outside. You see, these people, they won't fall. It's very difficult to take them down because they have such a network of money. There's the money again. A connection, interconnections, quite the tangled web of money, to where, you know, they lose a job in one place, they get a job somewhere else. No big deal, really. But they, in the course of being in a place, in a school or in a school system, they set up for that school or that school system's destruction. That public ed, their goal, corporate reform, the goal is that public ed would be no more, that it would be completely privatized. So that's the long explanation of my title.
But that's what I wanted to hear, because I started playing with the title and breaking it down, looking even up the standard definition of each of the words and then putting them together. And that's why I came up with my first question was to what is the title? Explain the title. What does it mean to you? Because I know what it means to me. And now the audience will have a much better idea in terms of both the title. And usually when we write and we come up with our titles, tell the public a lot about what our book is going to be about or the article is going to be about. So that was one of the main reasons that I wanted to start off with that particular question. Another question that I have is your purpose. What was the purpose in writing the book?
To inform, ultimately, to bring together information that is out in varied media. It's often not out in mainstream media, because the mainstream media has succumbed to being bought off. And unfortunately, some of the folks who are in very powerful positions promoting this privatization are also in powerful positions of financially controlling the media, radio stations, newspapers, and such. So I thought, well, you know, a lot of what I have in my book came alive in social media. Recently it has, in the recent last few years particularly, because of this manipulation of the mainstream media. I wanted to bring the information together, so that is a primary goal. Another reason I wrote the book is that Diane Ravitch, who saw my writing, thought that I could write a book. I didn't, and I write about that in the book too, her influence upon my writing the book. I didn't see myself as a person who could write a book like this. Years ago I thought about writing a book, but nothing like this. I've had people describe it as an encyclopedia of information on corporate reform, and that is what it is. But she particularly was influential in getting me to see myself as someone who could write a book. And so that's another reason. Now, I'm a public school teacher, and I don't have time during the year to write books. In writing this book, I wrote this book in one summer. I wrote it last summer, and I knew that if I were going to write, that I had to do it in the summer, because for me to sit down and write, I can write if I have time. I would sit down anywhere usually from 7 to 12 hours a day writing, because of I had to really get into it, because this is a very research-based book, and so I would end up on my computer at any time with 8, 9, 10 tabs open for different researching purposes tied into this book. And, you know, to get that deep in, I had to have the time. And so the timing of the book is tied to my school year and the time that I knew I had to write it. And it was an act of self-discipline to write this book. When I was halfway through the book, I calculated how many more days of summer I had, and I figured that I could finish the book by the end of the summer if I wrote a chapter every 2 days. And so that's what I did. And it was hard to do. I wrote a dissertation in statistics, and I didn't stay up past midnight working on that. But for this book, to get this book done in that time, I would write, I can't tell you, sometimes 14 hours a day, and I would have conversations with myself. I don't feel like writing. Okay, Schneider, duly noted. But if you're going to meet this goal, you're going to have to write. Okay, and so I would sit myself down and I would write. I knew that people would gain by seeing this information all in one place, and so that is what I wanted to create. And I knew I had a certain time frame in which to create it, and so that is what I did. By the end of the summer, I had the body of the book written, the 24 chapters, which is what I needed to have done. And so the rest of it, writing the intro and the conclusion and formatting the book, is something I didn't need to have 7 to 12 hours set aside in a day to do comfortably. So I was able to finish that to give my publisher the final draft with having people review it. By the first week of November, I was able to do that. So there it is.
I'm so glad you mentioned something about your dissertation, because when I first heard you say that you had a book coming out, and when I started seeing what it was about, my first thought was, this is her dissertation turned into a book because of, now this is important, because of the 80-some-odd pages of notes, annotations,
yes,
footnotes.
Yes,
that's what
I think it was Ken. Ken Previti, I think it was, who counted that up, the 88. I knew it was roughly 100, roughly a fifth of the book.
And for the audience out there, that amount of research, detail, recording of your research is only usually found in a dissertation, your doctoral dissertation. Because that's what's expected of you, that's what's required of you to show your mastery of the knowledge that has come before you, and to also be able to show what your dissertation will do in terms of adding to the knowledge in your field. So that was my first thought, was this was her dissertation. But later I found out it wasn't, that you were doing this basically. I will say maybe thought, okay, this was coming from your blog. Because I, as you know, I follow your blog, and your posts are so detailed, they're very well documented, and they're long, and you are prolific.
I
said to myself, how can this person do it? You and Diane both are the most prolific people I know. So, you may not agree with all of what I just said, but those were my first initial thoughts.
My dissertation was one-third of the length of this book, and it was actually on two types of numbers, a structure coefficient and a standardized coefficient associated with a statistical procedure. The way I've written the book, yes, it's well documented, and it had to be because I'm calling people out in this book. This is a whistleblower book. It calls people out. And if I'm going to do that, then I have to document where I'm getting my information. I can't just say it as though it's my opinion. So that's important. But as a researcher, it's second nature for me to document my source. I should document my source. I should have it available for those who want to look at it. Now, I don't want to frighten people and make them think that this book is written for academics. In writing the book, the audience I thought of when I was writing the book was parents and teachers and administrators and academics, and that's quite a variety right there. But I didn't want to write the book to make it sound dry, like some academic research papers read. And so my personality comes out in this book. Now, that has put me at risk of displeasing the academics, because there's comedy in this book. I make fun of things in this book, you know, and I have little one-liners in this book because it's my reaction to the things I'm reading. But I also purposely did not want to write this in a manner that would really make it difficult for people to grasp. That was not my goal. Now, I understand that it is heavy and condensed reading, and I've had people, Phyllis Bush, who is with the Network of Public Education, has told me that she reads it and wants to throw the book because she is angry at what she's reading. And I wrote to Phyllis and told her, I think the binding is strong enough to where if you need to hum the thing across the room, it can handle it. My principal at my school also mentioned that he has to read the book a little at a time because it makes him mad. Well, that making mad, that anger that comes from seeing what these corporate reformers are doing to public education, ideally is going to be fueled into activism, where people are going to get mad and they're going to get active. In fact, I did have a message on my Facebook about a man who brought Diane Ravitch's Reign of Error and my Chronicle of Echoes to a school board meeting and was letting the board have it, apparently, as a result of learning from my book and from Diane's book. And so that's wonderful. That's wonderful. That's how it's supposed to be used. And so the book is not a dissertation, even though I've had people comment. I think Ken Previti commented that it could be a dissertation, and that's quite a compliment because, you know, that attests to his belief in the thoroughness of the research. And, yes, it's thorough. What I like about my book is that many of the chapters can stand alone, and chapters on individuals and on organizations, they can stand alone. And I like that the chapters provide little histories, if you will, of individuals and organizations. I dug back to the beginnings, to the origins of organizations, and the beginnings of different people who are now headline or names in the destruction of American public education. I also dug back into the past to find, you know, some less than credible information, or not less than credible for them, given their positions. For example, Wendy Kopp, who is CEO of Teach for America, in researching her, I found out that when she was at Princeton in charge of the Princeton paper, that she actually was involved in fabricating letters to the editor and got away with it. You know, that in the 80s, that it was a big to-do, but she got away with it, and she graduated apparently with distinction. And so I thought, you know what? People need to know this, that this happened. The whole unresolved issue with Michelle Rhee and the test scores in D.C., I go through that whole history. It's all in one place. When I write about her. Some of the chapters are hooked together because of the nature of the histories. I do a few chapters on the history of mayoral control in Chicago, and I go back to the late 80s, and I move that forward, and I talk about such names as Arne Duncan, as Barack Obama. You got Paul Vallis involved in that. Mayor Daley, Richard Daley, involved in that, and I take that, and of course, Rahm Emanuel is involved in that, and then the whole deal with Karen Lewis and the teachers' union. All of that is documented. All move forward, and I have a few chapters on Paul Vallis because Paul Vallis started in Chicago under Mayor Daley as superintendent, but then he moved on. He moved on to Philadelphia, and then he ended up in Connecticut, and he was in New Orleans before he ended up in Connecticut. Or I forget. I am forgetting the order right now, but I have it in the book. It's all documented. And again, this is to inform people and to help them see a bigger picture of reform. I'm ready for your next question. I know I say a lot when I get to talking, but there's a lot to say.
And that's what I want you to do. This is basically your show, your hour, so you can say it all. But I will say this. You totally anticipated what was going to be my next question and my question after that. My next question was going to be your primary audience. You dealt with that. You dealt with the dissertation versus the original book. And I want to sort of round out this big picture that I'm starting with asking you, do you have a central premise to your book? And if so, what is that central premise?
That that corporate reform has been growing for a while, and that it is worldwide, but my book primarily focuses on our nation. It's nationwide, that it is motivated by greed, and I wanted people in different locales, different states, different districts, who think that some terrible thing is happening to them, where their schools are being taken over, their schools are being blackballed, and and they think, oh, this is just happening here. I wanted them to see that there's a bigger picture. It's a much bigger picture. And some people are relieved to know that oh, this isn't just us, that things that are happening, like right now in New Orleans with school performance scores, are happening in Tennessee. And the shame is that it is nationwide. But where people can take heart from it is that, okay, I'm not alone in this. There are people who can help me fight this and help me understand this. And the book itself, I've told people I can sum my book up in two words. I'm telling. You know, that I know what you people are doing, and I'm telling. And so that's, there it is. I wanted to tell on them.
That is perfect. That is so good. I mean, it really is. I took the liberty to answer that question for you in terms of central premise. This is what I came up with. Dr. Snyder's new book calls attention to the contemporary war on public education in the United States and some of the most powerful and wealthiest individuals and organizations behind the war, a war to destroy public education and to erect corporate privatized education. That was sort of like my summary of your book.
It's a great summary. That is.
And my show, when you go to my homepage on the network, it says that the show is all about talking about the who, the what, the where, the how, the when of the corporate war on public education and the rising social movement, resistance against that war. So in that sense, you and I were doing pretty much the same thing. I want to identify the individual organizations. I want to come out and flat out say what they're doing, go further by saying what they're doing, why, how, and et cetera, and using the war metaphor. So I had to get that in because I was wrestling with that question. Excuse me. I wanted to see whether or not you would agree with my premise once you stated your premise. And I think there's some agreement there.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's definitely a war here. And I think what corporate reform is surprised at is where the soldiers are fighting against them. And I will tell you that according to them, they're well-connected. And they have a lot of media attention because of their connections. And the likes of me coming against them, who is she, some public school teacher? I think it's comical because they didn't expect teachers. Now, they look down on teachers in general. Corporate reformers look down on teachers. We don't do our jobs. We're in it for the money, which I think is hilarious. You know, because my salary can't even touch some of the empty salaries that these people are pulling for being privatizers. But that I don't want to teach, that I'm incompetent at teaching, and that we're just going to come in and take over, basically, I think was their view. And I think that was really John White's view. He's the state superintendent in Louisiana, and it really took me a while to even be able to say that because he's an empty suit who's been positioned, who has only token background in education, but who has been positioned to privatize. So to call him a superintendent, he's not superintending. He's destroying is what he's doing. But I don't think he expected to have teachers come up against him and parents come up against him. I think he just thought he would come in and he would bring in privatization, and it would just be easy to do, and there would be no fight, there would be no issue, especially if mainstream media were on his side. But lo and behold, here come these teachers and these parents and administration and others who have an interest in public education, who have an interest in democracy, And they get on social media and they get together, and now they're a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's wonderful. And if they didn't expect it, then they should have expected it. But I don't think they have as much control as they thought they were going to have. They certainly don't have control over me and my ability to publish a book about what they're doing, because it's written and it's published, and it's out there. And I know people are reading it because they're telling me they're reading it, and I'm especially grateful to social media and to people I know now on Facebook and through the blog and from email. And I'm not on Twitter. I had to draw the line in order to be able to sleep still, to be prolific in writing and still be able to sleep. I've had to draw the line at Twitter, but I am on social media, and through my blog, certainly my message is there on social media. And now I have this book, and I don't say this arrogantly, but it is a great book. It's a great resource, and so I hope people will avail themselves of it and use it.
Well, I think that's already proven itself. I recall when you first put out on your blog that Sunday that your book was now available on Amazon. I rushed to buy it, and was about the fifth or sixth person to send you a message saying that I bought the book and et cetera. And I now see there are a whole lot of other people behind me saying, you know, we bought the book and it's great and et cetera, et cetera. Also, I don't know if you were aware of this, but right after you announced your book and before I got my copy, Diane put out a post saying that your book was just doing gangbusters and that there was a different book that had come out about within, I guess, a couple of days of your book that was basically pro-privatization,
yes,
pro-charters, et cetera. And I announced on my show that your book, according to Diane and others, was in the top, was it three or four or five?
It did.
At that time,
Yes, yes. I'm learning how to read Amazon. Go ahead, please.
Let me finish. And that I won't call it competitor because it wasn't in the same universe with you, but the other book was something like 200 and some odd thousand ranking. And I went on to say how your book did not have a major budget, didn't have a big machine behind you promoting it, and et cetera. And whereas the other book did, it was corporate sponsored, but your book was kicking its ass.
And relatively speaking,
the teachers and the families and et cetera, we went out, bought your book, and have never looked back in terms of the number of people who are buying your book. And with that, can you tell me where your book is now and how many copies have sold in this, 1 month or so that's been out?
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know exactly how many copies have sold. I don't know that. I do watch the Amazon rankings. You know, being a numbers person and having numbers at my disposal, I'm going to watch them, and I have to be careful that I don't get so taken in with numbers that I forget really what they mean. Now, the book, when it was first released, Diane emailed me and said, "Do you know that your book is like ranked 6,400 on Amazon?" Now, that's out of 2 million plus books. And I had no idea. But she watches my book, and I watch my book. I tease her, and I call it her grand book, because she was so influential in my writing it, and her interest in my book is a vested interest, because she assisted me with this the whole process. But I watch the book and I watch the fluctuations, and I compare to what's happening with other books to try and understand what the Amazon rankings mean. And I have seen my book go the lowest ranking was about 66,000. And what that, I have to remember what that means, because that still puts it around the top 3% of Amazon books. And so I've seen it jump as high as 1692, I think it was, which puts it really high. But it depends on, you know, it depends. I read on Amazon how the rankings work. It depends on overall sales and sales within an hour. So somehow they're figuring in both. But I have noticed, for example, the book, when we started talking, we started the show, the book was at 61,000, and I just checked it, and it's at 32,000. And so what that means is people were buying the book, and I appreciate that. But I don't know hard and fast numbers yet. When I know those, it'll give me a better sense of what the Amazon ranking means. Now, as for the other book that Diane was talking about, that's a book that was put out by the Brookings Institute, and that was written by Paul Peterson and some others, entitled Teachers Versus the Public, and it was supposedly using research showing that it's the teachers and not the public who are getting in the way of these great reforms that are privatizing. Well, first off, to say that teachers don't want their schools privatized, it's like, duh, of course we don't, because you're declaring we're a non-profession, that we can be replaced, you know, by temporary teachers, and that charter schools turning over, it's a good thing because it's the market forces at work, and we don't think that churn in our communities is a good thing. It's not good for our kids. And teaching is a profession. And so for that book to not be doing so well, I'm not surprised about that, because the premise is all, it's just a bad premise for a book, even for corporate reform. And then they've got people promoting it, like Joel Klein, former chancellor of New York City, and Michelle Rhee, former chancellor of D.C., and Jeb Bush, who is former Florida governor, all of whom want privatization, and each of whom, by the way, I've written about in my book in detail. And so the fact that they're promoting that book, I don't think that that's necessarily a beneficial thing, that this group is saying, hey, we like this book, because they've all caused problems for the places where they have been in leadership as far as corporate reform, bringing in reforms that haven't worked. They've only been destructive. So I'm not surprised that that book's not doing well. My book, I'm still waiting on the Kindle edition, which I heard is going to be ready this coming week. And so I know people have contacted me saying, I'm waiting for Kindle. And so once I have that, once I have confirmed that the Kindle edition is up and ready for purchase, then I will put the word out on that. But given that the Kindle edition is not available yet, and that it's the paperback really that has been selling, I am so pleased with how the sales of the book are going, and not because it sells. And I'm going to tell you, sometimes I forget that I get to make money off of this. I don't even think in terms of the money. I think in terms of the word getting out, you know, that in this book, there's so much information that is useful to people fighting corporate reform, if for no other reason than to get them better versed in the bigger picture and the interconnections among the so-called reformers. I know they're not really reformers. They are causing lots of problems for public education. I mean, that's an understatement that they're causing.
I have a
problems.
Hard time using the word reformers too. I really do. I
well, you know,
for different words.
Right. Well, it's a joke to me now to be that they are calling themselves reformers, because. And Diane has written this on her blog, they are actually the new status quo. It's, you know, it's now the thing, and it's been the thing for years, you know, to we want to get rid of school boards. We want to get rid of community schools. We want to bring in privatization in the form of underregulated charters and vouchers. We want to give choice, but we want to monitor exactly how that choice works. We don't really want to give open choice completely. We want to monitor it, you know. All of these messages are coming out. Common Core, I talk about that in the book. David Coleman, the non-teacher who found himself in a very profitable position with Common Core. I have a chapter on him, but I'm also writing another book this summer on Common Core, on getting into really what happened. Where did Common Core come from? And so that'll be a book, ideally, that I'll get done this summer. But the book I have published now, A Chronicle of Echoes, there's so much that can be useful in it, and that is useful to those who are fighting corporate reform. There's the evidence. There's evidence there that the reforms, the so-called reforms, are not working. They are only destroying. And so for people to get this in their hands, and to be able to use this as a tool and as a resource, it's phenomenal. I even have, I've heard from two professors, one at LSU, Louisiana State, and the other at Fordham, who have said that they plan on using my book in a course, education course, as far as what's going on in education. And it really is geared to that because of the documented history of reform that it provides. But I've had other people in the news, in the media, who want to know what's going on but are not able really to find out and have been relying a lot on social media and on blogging in particular, who are curious and interested in this book that comes out, and it's one place to read so much about what's going on in corporate reform. So there's great value in the book, you know, and I realize that no matter what numbers say on Amazon, and the numbers are good, but aside from the numbers, the value for me in the book is, like I said, I'm telling on these people, and I want to tell it, and I did tell it in such a way that it is ammunition for those who are fighting this corporate reform machine that is overtaking the American community school.
That is so very well put. And again, you anticipate probably a half a dozen of my questions as I was moving down my list, and I don't have to go there anymore. But I do want to get one more question aimed at the big picture sort of perspective, and that is, what was your criteria for including the individuals and organizations that you did and leaving out many others that I would have assumed you would have put in terms of either individual chapters or major parts of different chapters? So the question is, what were the criteria? What were you thinking? In terms
well,
of thinking?
I had one summer. I had one summer.
Okay.
To write the book, okay? That was a major factor. And I had my own exhaustion to deal with and my own stamina in writing this book and cranking out this book. And so in deciding the organizations, I chose organizations that I was seeing, as I was writing my blogs, that I was seeing them come up, and that I thought that their influence was major, that they were trying to reach far. And so that was part of the criteria. And the same was true for individuals. Who is having the most profound effect? Who is the media touting? Who is likely, when the book is published, to try and have some national goal, like Jeb Bush? Jeb Bush in this 2016 bid for the presidency, he was going to be in this book, and his reforms in Florida, I picked them apart to show the failure that they are, because I wanted people who want to really weigh Jeb Bush's so-called Florida miracle to have the ammunition to weigh that. And so that's how I chose him. Michelle Rhee is in the national spotlight. Wendy Kopp is in the national spotlight. But then there are organizations also that I was finding in the national spotlight, and some of them I couldn't go into the detail that I wanted to go into, but others I did. Jeb Bush's foundations, he has three foundations that I discuss in the book, and Michelle Rhee, Students First, Democrats for Education Reform, NCTQ with its grading of teacher prep programs, National Council on Teacher Quality, Stand for Children. These are organizations that I was seeing that they had influence. Still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, something weird just happened with my phone. Okay.
Okay.
And so that's how I decided, but it came down to a point where I needed to end the book. And it was a huge book, and as it was, when I finished writing, James, I had to cut back because my chapters, some of them were too big. And so it was, as it is a packed book. It's 500 pages long, but some of the font is small because if it were going to be any bigger, it would have been a 700-page book. So it was a matter of I just had to make judgments, and I just had to bring an end to the book. I had thought about doing a chapter on Paul Peterson, who is the one who published that Teachers Versus the Public book, but I thought, you know, in his influence was on other individuals, and I had touched on those individuals briefly, and I had decided, you know what, it's the end of July, I'm tired, there's not enough for me to justify doing the chapter, and I just needed to end the book. It was just time. So,
you know what? You answered that so well when you first said I only had 2 months to do it. That should have been my clue before I even came up with the question that was the constraint in existence. I'm going to take a liberty here and sort of try and tie this up and see whether or not you agree with my summation here. And it deals with basically the message that I think you were trying to get over. I know it was what I perceived your message to be. And it sort of goes around this idea of what we've been talking about in terms of the 88 pages of your documentation. You use evidence, straight out evidence. The other side, they don't use evidence. And when they do use evidence, it's usually flawed in nature, so that what I saw you doing was that you were using evidence both as a defense against the corporate war on education and as well as an offensive weapon in this war. And by all of that, what I mean is that you take your evidence and you apply critical analysis to their statements, their practices, and you show and also prove that their real purpose, method, and propaganda is not aimed at improving the quality of education to everyone, creating access and quality education, etc. You destroy that, in my opinion, with your evidence. You also take the same evidence and you expose both their overt and their covert agendas, which I call their Trojan horses. You expose the exterior as well as the interior of those horses, like few others I have found been able to do. And to me, this is the major takeaway for me. And another point was that many people talk about you connecting the dots. And my answer to that is, first, you have to see the dots, realize that they're dots, understand that they're dots, before you can connect the dots. And to me, you did this better than anyone around so far. You made the dots visible. You explained what the dots were all about. And you connected them with an understanding of there is a powerful network of individuals and organizations out there whose combined purpose is to destroy public education. I take your message because, again, of course, that's what my whole show is about, and I compare it to what Eisenhower said, the late, of course, ex-president, former president Dwight D. Eisenhower, in his farewell address to the nation, where he famously warned us about the growing relationship between the military and industry, which came out to be the military-industrial complex. You, in connecting our dots, while exposing and connecting our dots, you go a long way, in my opinion, in making us aware, warning us of a new complex that has formed, and if we don't do something about it, they will have their way. Again, that's my take.
I think that's a very well put take. Thank you. And a very complimentary take. You know, the book I'm writing right now on Common Core, what I'm seeing as I'm digging into that is where we made a turn in allowing business to have a say in education, but not just a say, to setting up nonprofits to where they could have a say through their money as well. So that, yes, that you can consider that my Eisenhower moment in that, you know, we've got, it's one thing for business to be involved in advising, and it's quite another for business to be involved in the financial end, and not just putting in money, but benefiting, profiting from their involvement. And we open that nonprofit door, and then we've got a shift in philanthropy, where the philanthropists are not content to donate and to say, look, we want to support you. You are the experts in your field. We will donate to support you in what you feel expertly is important. No, no. They've come in and they've said, it's our money, and we're going to tell you what we think you should spend it on. And so there's that shift. So all of these shifts have come together. And in the book I'm writing now, I compare it to like the storm systems that happened when I lived in Colorado and drove across to Missouri. They'd happen across Kansas. There'd be a storm system coming from the north and one coming from the west, and they would come together in this super storm. And so that's what's happening in education, and that is evident. It's evident in A Chronicle of Echoes that these different pieces have come together, and they're allowing public education to be ambushed and bought off. And the people who would be protectors of the democratic institution of education are being bought off. And you know, some of them may not want to be bought off, but they are in a position now where they have to decide whether it's going to be their integrity or their job. You know, oh, well, you know, I have to go along because this group supports me, you know, and that's the bottom line. And it's the bottom line for me as a teacher. You know, it's integrity or my job.
I'm going to have to cut us off here because we're coming to the end of the show.
That is quite all right.
I want to say one thing. Dr. Snyder and I have talked about her coming back and co-hosting a 2- or 3-part series on the Common Core. First, she said, no way, I'll be too busy. Then she softened up when I talked to her just a couple of days ago, and she sort of like opened the door. And I'm hoping after this appearance on the show, she'll come back. Oh, she did tell me to come back in a month, and we'll see how she has progressed on the book. And
that's
if she's
right.
In a good place, then we will go ahead and do our piece on the Common Core, which will be incredible because she is, without a doubt, the most expert person I know on the subject of the Common Core. I think I'm good, but I'm so far in the rearview mirror to her, so that hopefully if she can do this with us, we will have a great show. I'm going to have to say goodbye, but I also want to send out a message. The month of May, we did a show every month, and that was the month of May was dedicated to teachers and showing our appreciation for teachers. I'm going to go back now to the biweekly format, and our next show would be on the 15th, but since that's Father's Day, I'm not going to do a show on the 15th. I did a show on Mother's Day, and fathers may say they deserve equal time. I'm a father, mm-hmm. and you're not getting it. So, now, with that stated, our next show would be on the 22nd, and I'm going to give you a hint. If I can do what I want to do, it would be very big, very explosive, and it will be on neoliberalism and its impact on public education as we know it. With that, folks, I hope you enjoyed the show with Dr. Snyder, and hope you will come back and continue our journey on how this war has come about and how it is going. Have a good day, everyone. You too.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.
I said war! Good God, y'all!
What is it good for?
Absolutely! Let's get saying again!
War!
Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord!
What is it good for?
Absolutely!
Nothing!
Listen to me!
War!
It ain't nothing but a heartbreak!
War!
Send only to the Undertaker!